Hello, hello, hello. It's Mary Spicer, and you're here listening to The Mary Spicer Show on 1-2 Radio, changing the way you listen to the world. Thank you so much for being here today. I'm so excited that you're with us. I'm very excited about this show, especially our special guest. I think she has just amazing energy and is so on course with all the things that are happening right now in the world as far as the feminine, the body, the womb, the feminine inner creative voice, getting in touch with that. And most definitely, with all the work I do, the intuitive healing energy work and also very much on 1-2 Listen, so many of my psychic clients always calling in and always curious about the one. Where is the one? And not just this calling of wanting to get married and have, this sense of stability in a relationship. Actually, I have so many clients these days looking for something deeper, really searching for this deeper sense of knowing that lives within their body, a deep calling to connect with a sacred relationship, actually to go very deep with someone on an intimate level, on a spiritual level, on a knowing level, on a trust level. And this is just a subject that's very, very near and dear to my heart. So I'm really excited today. First of all, I want to thank Laura, our lovely producer, as well as her always warming up the airwaves before me with her show, Laura Out Loud. She always brings such heart to the airwaves, and I deeply appreciate that. So today, I'd like to welcome Anaya Ayan Prakasha, the author of Pilgrimage of Love, A Tale of Romance, Heartbreak, and Meeting the One, and also another amazing book that she co-created, Womb Wisdom, Awakening the Creative and Forgotten Powers of the Feminine. Hello, Anaya. How are you?
I'm doing great. Mary, thank you so much for bringing me on your show.
I just love your energy. You always make me smile. I've listened to a few of your radio interviews on your website, which is a pilgrimageoflove.com. Is that what it is?
That's right. Yes. Everything's there. Yes.
Yes. So check out a pilgrimageoflove.com if you'd like to get more in touch with Anaya and get her books and also find out a little bit about all these amazing programs that you've created, right?
Yeah, I've been quite busy. Yes.
You are extremely busy. Well, I just wanted to share a little bit of my story before we go into to your lovely story. We have some similarities in the sense that at 37, I was diagnosed with premature ovarian failure. A diagnosis that came from the medical community and one that I never really took to heart because of some other things that were happening in my life. And I just always felt that there was something that wasn't right in that the finality of the diagnosis. Mm. And I actually looked at this diagnosis as a gift and a tool for me to really start to investigate my inner workings. And what happened was something of what you described in your books was actually starting to use my womb as a compass to guide me to my healing.
Yes.
And when I came across, I found you, you just radiated to me via Facebook. You have this amazing magnetism to you. And I didn't even know what you had done, but I knew that I had to go find your books, and I got them. And I just was so excited to connect to you. So, Anaya, I would like to just talk to you about the Pilgrimage of Love, and I wanted to first just start with the first poem that's in this book from Rumi. And I just love this. I thought it would be a great opener for our show.
Yeah.
The minute I heard my first love story, I started looking for you, not knowing how blind that was. Lovers don't finally meet somewhere. They're in each other all along. Rumi. Isn't that amazing?
Isn't that just like the truth? God.
It is the truth. Throughout the Pilgrimage of Love, there's all these amazing Sufi poetry that just is so much about the deep call to love. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could tell me about your call to share the divine within another and what the mountain symbolized to you.
Okay, well, the first time I ever saw and came into contact with this greater love was when I was 12. You've probably heard this story 100 times.
That's okay. It's beautiful.
I was 12. I was coming down the steps of the Sacré-Cœur in Paris, a beautiful Gothic whitewashed cathedral high on the Montmartre. And underneath, it's all the bohemian hangout area. So there's paintings, there's artists, there's sculptors, there's dancers. This is like really romantic Paris. And I was walking down these steps, and there seems to be hundreds of them by the time you get down to Montmartre. And there was this man that appeared to the normal world as a beggar or a homeless person. And he had his hands outreached in like a little shallow cup, as if he was, well, asking for something, I guess, but his head was down. And I was absolutely transfixed by him. So much so that this desire to connect with him just got the better of me, and I had to rush back. I had to just go against, you know, all the fears that I had as a child. Which was, ooh, this person looks homeless, he looks maybe a bit dangerous or something. And I just ran to him, and I put my hands over the top of his, which caused his head to look up because he could feel my contact. And I tell you, Mary, his beautiful, beautiful blue eyes gazed up and looked straight at mine. And, you know, in my child mentality, This was like the eyes of Christ. Mm-hmm. These eyes were full of so much love, that I must admit, for a moment I had to look away because I almost couldn't bear it. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, obviously hungrily coming straight back and re-engaging, but re-engaging in such a kind of childlike, confused way. Because I started to beg Mum and Dad to take him home with us, you know. I just did not want to leave his side. And in that moment of so much overwhelm of emotion, the message that came through was, there's another on the planet that feels the way you do. Or it was something like, I'm looking into the eyes of my family, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the beginning. The mountain in France, this is a very real place, by the way, and, you know, everything in pilgrimage is exactly as it happened. The only thing I've done is change the names. I actually met a lady from the UN who told me about this mountain, who said it's a mountain that you go to and you pray to meet your beloved. If the prayer is sincere and, you know, rich enough, if it's full of your desire, your Shakti and your Bhakti. So, you know, telling me something like that, it's literally only a matter of time before I'm on that cave, on that mountain, sorry.
Yeah, it was such a beautiful point in the book. And it was so interesting because it was really about you shifting from this old dynamic that had kind of been on some level eating away at you, this old life that just didn't feel like you were on your calling. You had a sense that this was not the truth, almost a sense of that it was a lie in some level. And at that point in your life, right when you need it, this lovely UN guide comes in and tells you about this mountain. And that really shifted things, didn't it?
Totally, totally. And I always came back to that moment on the steps of Sacré-Cœur. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, that was another sort of angel, you know, a guide coming in. Because those eyes carried the image of what I was destined to become. So just by looking into those eyes, I remembered what I was really here for.
You remembered within looking into at a 12-year-old girl looking into his eyes, those blue eyes, that there was a beloved, there was another on the earth in the physical form. That,
correct.
That was the divine within.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So what actually is a beloved relationship? I love this, by the way. I'm very excited.
Well, there's a couple of things. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to give you the sort of mainstream answer. And then if you like, I'll give you my personal one.
Great.
The mainstream answer. So what is the beloved? So very simply, the beloved is another who knows himself or herself to be intrinsically linked to the source of love. And is absolutely willing to go into the fire, just like that fantastic poem by Mountain Dreamer. I think it's called The Invitation.
Mm-hmm.
Will you stand in the fire with me? So it's another man or a woman who knows at their core they are the source, they are part of the source of love. That's really important. I do not feel you can do this journey if it's all just ideas in your head or in your mind. You've got to feel the heartbeat. You've got to feel the pulse of this desire in your body. So you've got to have that hunger and that thirst, just like Rumi and Shams. It's got to be real. It's got to be, you know, stirring around inside your belly and your heart, and your desire is full of this longing to go on the journey. This is not something you keep at arm's length.
No, it has to be physically felt,
yeah,
and physically manifested.
And yeah, and you know, you don't just do this at the weekend when you're not working. Oh my God.
It's a full life commitment, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's what was so brilliantly, energetically communicated in your book. You really feel the depth of the commitment that it took from leaving somewhat of a normal, safe life. You were a pretty well-known yoga teacher, had a lot of, I would say fame on some level or recognition on some level in your job. And just woke up one day and said, this is it. I'm going on this pilgrimage, right?
Totally, Mary. I had to. You know, I would read over those poems by Rumi and Shams and other Sufi mystics. Whew, I just had to know what that was about, because I'd read the words, something would be touched, I'd begin to cry, and it was never tears for a man. It was never tears for, oh my God, I want to have a relationship like this. It was like, no way, I just want to feel these energies running through my system. I want to know how deep this rabbit hole is. You know, I'm willing to take the red pill or whatever in the Matrix. I had to know, Mary. I had to know, and I had to become that same longing that's in that poetry. And as you said at the beginning of the show, it's nothing to do with nice romance, lovely house, great job, great family. Although, obviously, that can be part of it.
I totally agree that that can be part of it, and that it can actually be all that it is. Why do you feel that on a universal level, this calling, I'm seeing this calling in a lot of clients that I work with and really in a lot of my friends, why do you feel that this calling is so prevalent much more now than, say, maybe 10, 15 years ago?
Because it's quite clear to all of us, really. Our consciousness is shifting and deepening. And, you know, we're ruthlessly pulling back the veils and we're getting closer. We're starting to like really rub up against the fibers and the fabric of our soul. And I feel we're able to do that because we're doing so much more emotional healing and facing those emotional traumas. And as we start to delve really into the emotional aspects of our being, I feel we start to connect in a really true way to the essence of our soul. And this is where this whole thing of like twin flame or soulmate comes up, because this other, this beloved, let's just say there really is, you know, another soul half out there. Let's just say we really were created, you know, in two beings, a masculine part, feminine part. And this is kind of like my personal, this is my personal belief. So as we start to clear and heal all the emotions, we start to tune into the fabric and the essence of the soul. And lo and behold, we start to feel, hang on a minute, where is this other? You know, I can feel him inside of me. I can feel her inside of me. The essence, the energetic signature, just the knowing that this other is on earth. Or, I mean, I would say it's the people on earth who are really feeling this beloved energy, and they're coming to you, Mary, saying, hey, where is he? Where is he? Where is she? I feel if you've got the big, big desire in your body and it's with you 24/7, that is a really clear signal that this other is on planet.
I definitely agree with that. The way I look at it, it's almost that we send out the magnetic vibration that calls the other to us. And I definitely feel that our magnetism or the vibration that sends out that pulse to connect to the other actually lives more in our pelvic bowl, the bottom of our body, not the mental body. It's not coming from there. It's coming from the womb and the heart, which I love so much how you describe in your womb wisdom book, that information. I just love it. I'd love to hear how did it feel when you met your beloved? And I have a lot of people always asking me, how do you know? So how did you know?
Okay. Well, the man you're referring to in Pilgrimage of Love, at the very, very beginning, I truly thought this was my soul half, my twin flame at the time. I now realize in hindsight and through tremendous growth, this was in fact a very, very dear and special soulmate. Like in Pilgrimage, I suggest that soulmates, see, this is the hallmark. This is how we know what's what. And I can only share this from you in hindsight. Soulmates come into our lives and we fulfill a very deep sort of family duty. And that is to shape and craft and to carve the other one more into the signature, into the template that they're carrying. So the job is to really refine this other being so that they step more authentically into what they're destined to be. So in a soulmate relationship, obviously the love is there, the companionship, the trust, the intimacy. But what's being created is two very whole individuals.
Deeply agree with that, yes.
Right. And I feel, and I don't know this for fact yet, this is a work in progress. I feel when you meet your twin flame or your soul half, and I feel there is one and one only throughout all of existence, there's always just one energetic signature that you dance with in this way. That individuality, which would have by this time have become so refined, so brilliant, and yet so subtle, that individuality is then surrendered, and the two of you, you cannot bear to have that individuality. The longing is so intense to come back into reunion. And the two of you will embark on a process to do that, which is what I'm studying and researching constantly. And then that reunion is given to something far greater than just the two of you. And that's why I'm often referring to like Neo and Trinity in the Matrix, Arwen and Aragorn in Lord of the Rings, where, your entirety is given, like Rumi and Shams, to something of such an exquisite nature.
Something much larger than self, and something that also vibrates in the universal field and helps to create helps to create change within the universal field, which is amazing.
And then
also how it is a union, yet it also is still containing the individual and helps to build the individual within the union, which I really think is quite, quite beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we are going to go to break soon, Anaya. But what I did want to say is when we come back, I would love to talk about the shadow side, because it kind of cracked me up when you said that you were actually the character in the Pilgrimage of Love, that she was actually dating a shadow side teacher, or I believe that's what you said. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct.
Yeah, we have to hear more about that. And then we're going to talk about sexual healing. This is Mary Spicer, and you are listening to The Mary Spicer Show here on 1-2 Radio, changing the way you listen to the world. You can find me most days at 1-2 Listen, where I am a psychic advisor, which I just truly love connecting with my clients. I love, love, love to work with you and help you revision your life. You can also look for my classes at 12academy.com and find me on the web at maryspicer.com and also at Facebook. Just search Mary Spicer. I would so love to connect to you. Hello, hello, hello. It's Mary Spicer. You're listening to The Mary Spicer Show here on 1-2 Radio, changing the way you listen to the world. I am here with my lovely guest, Anaya Ann Prakasha, who I just really love her energy and her radiance. I thought that we'd come back and we might talk about the shadow a bit. And I wanted to read another poem that's in the Pilgrimage of Love book. And it's called, I Am and I Am Not. I'm drenched in the flood which has yet to come. I'm tied up in the prison which has yet to exist. Not having played the game of chess, I'm already the checkmate. Not having tasted a single cup of your wine, I'm already drunk. Not having entered the battlefield, I am already wounded and slain. I no longer know the difference between image and reality. Like the shadow, I am and I am not. Rumi. Yeah. I just love that.
Yes.
Intro to the shadow. Tell me about the shadow, our friend the shadow, that we all have and try desperately to avoid.
Absolutely. Well, our friend the shadow, for me, it feels in my body when it starts to arise, like this kind of growly, resistant, highly protective, heavily guarded, sort of like, it's kind of like a swirly black energy. Now, we all have a shadow. And I feel, I'm at this point now, where I feel that the shadow can actually be called an ally. Because when you feel it lurking around, you know that all it is doing is keeping a very fragile and vulnerable part of your essence heavily guarded, heavily protected. But the thing is, with most people, once the shadow starts growling around, that's my favorite word at the moment, growling, we usually just merge immediately with its frequency, with our essence. So we become the growl, you know, we become the heavily loaded guard. We become the being that, like, hey, if you touch this, you know, I'm going to singe your eyebrows. And you know what, Mary? I've been looking at this through the Egyptian mystery schools as well. Because, you know, a lot of people can say things like, oh, it's my temper. You know, I'm temperamental. I used to go under the banner of, oh, I'm half Irish. Of course I'm this way. Or, you know, I've got Latin blood. You know, you know, this is part of my culture. Not really. We all have this mechanism inside of us. And the Egyptian mystery schools actually said it was an entire body. So if we look at light bodies or subtle bodies in the Egyptian mystery schools, this was called the Sahu. This was the shadow body. So it was like an absolute replica of ourselves, but full of that kind of shadowy, you know, resistant, very, very mental energy.
And how do you think that the shadow aspects pertained to creating a sacred relationship, pertained to a beloved relationship? Because I often, you know, can feel the shadow as a almost, I call it the inner authority or the guard. And I actually feel that it's really to work with the shadow in a way of loosening the grip of the inner authority, the inner guard.
Yes.
And inviting those experiences in to actually work with the inner guard or the shadow side, to actually watch you get pinged around like a sped up ball out of control and yes. Just watching yourself. So in your book, The Pilgrimage of Love, you talked a lot about the shadow aspects. And how do you feel the shadow side reveals itself within divine relationship, within a beloved relationship?
Okay, well, I think the buzzword at the moment, especially since I've been in the States, I keep hearing this word triggered. You know, mm-hmm. You've been triggered. And that is exactly right. That is exactly the energy of the shadow. It's like, you know, it's coming from the hip. It blows up and into existence from nowhere. And the magnitude of this energy, you can only kind of like go, wow, that's respectful. That is a huge piece of energy. Now, in beloved sacred union relationships, again, this is something that absolutely has to be acknowledged and addressed ASAP. Just say, you know, and this is how it's going to be for me in the future. I'm going to, you know, just say, okay, this, and this is going on. We have to be aware of our shadow pieces. And maybe, you know, you could have like a little buzzword, a little word, a little kind of like safe word that so that you can bring this word up because the shadow is beginning to be stirred. And this was the process that I would go through with Sananda, the character in Pilgrimage. You know, we'd both be so honest, just say, hey, you know what? My shadow's stirring. So we'd be able to catch it before it went into full-blown, takeover of the body. But you see, once it's full-blown, once it's really raging through you, it's very difficult to stay subjected and to stay disconnected because, you know, you're in to the guardianship of that energy. You become the guardian. It's all the will in the world to be able to break through into the fragility that it's protecting.
And open up to that vulnerability, which is really what the pilgrimage is really about, is allowing vulnerability, allowing love, and almost like a mother or a father patiently parenting the shadow and saying, it's okay. We're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Let's take that step. I love this one, sentence you wrote, and it was when you were in a shadow aspect. It said, I declared that I was willing to have my heart broken a million times in this pilgrimage of love. I really just love that sense because it really is about just really opening up for whatever it is, whatever it takes. I'm just going to open up and go through this, just giving permission to go through this.
That's right. And at the core of that, Mary, really was that longing, hunger, thirst, something like that, for God. for home, you know, for truth, for, you know, for that love that saturates the pages of Rumi. I wanted, and still to this day, long for that so deeply that I am willing to have the shadow totally dissected. To just, you know, just to say, here we go, here it is, here is the shadow in its full glory. Now help me get to the bottom of this, help me go through this, you know, and by any means necessary. Talking to a dear friend the other day about Malcolm X, that was his strap lines. By any means necessary, I am willing to go through whatever it takes to reach that longing, that truth, you know, to go home, to really, really go home.
To go home and to look at what may be perceived as broken, but what yes. really, but what really isn't, which is yes. just another deeper expression of you yeah. really finding your way home.
Yeah.
You're the map of self in your pilgrimage of
yes.
love, not just the other, but to love self as well.
Yeah. And yeah. also just to say just a touch more about the shadow.
Mm-hmm.
The shadow can often lead to some really big emotions. You know, like at the moment we're, you know, having a little play and joking about the shadow, but it actually has a pillar. At the core of its essence is the pillar upon which it orbits and rotates. And these are heavy, powerful sensations. For me, it was control. And, you know, the more you can touch that pillar, the more you can start to feel the amount of energy that was rotating around this pillar head. And for me, it was control. It can be intense fear. It can be terror. It can be despair. It can be the feelings of like so much anger that you feel that you could tear someone apart. So I just have to say, just for your listeners, these are big energies. And if you're out there going through these big energies, don't worry. It's normal. It's normal. It's natural. We've been there. And, yeah, this is kind of what it takes.
And it really is. It is really is. Those pillars are there to actually help us learn what
yes.
center is, help us learn who we are, help us learn the power of who we
yes.
are, help us to delve deeper into our desires and also on some sense a deep sense of vulnerability and also claiming your right to have that you are worthy of that you are allowed to have a deep love.
Yes.
And in the pilgrimage of love, it ends in a really beautiful note, doesn't it? It's about going through the fire, but it's also about coming and literally coming to home, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
God, so, yes, yes.
What I really love in the back of the book is you really give permission for people to go on their own journey, to really, in a sense, saying, I did it, this character did it. You can do it too. And then you tell them where this mountain is in France as well.
Yes. Yes.
And then really helping them to open up to find their beloved, which I really appreciated the energy that's transmitted in that. It's a very deep call. And then you also give description, talk about the seven gates of sexual healing. I'm wondering if you could tell me about that.
Okay. Well, if you can imagine the seven chakras in our body going from the root to the crown, there's like a little mini chakra system, although it's not chakras, but there's another seven pointed system that also energetically maps out for the woman. It's the yoni leading into the womb space. And for the man, it's his lingam that also leads into the womb space. So within a woman, she has seven veils. We could also call it seven gateways, energetically inside her reproductive system, whereas with the man, he has four, and the other three are found inside his beloved. Mm-hmm. So it's slightly different for the masculine. These seven gates for the woman, again, a little bit like the shadow, there are seven energetic guardians standing at the foot of each gate. So when you go on this seven gate journey with your beloved, you're going to be moving through those places, again, that could have been quite heavily guarded, heavily protected, so that you can open up the yoni and the womb in such a vulnerable way, in a really real way. Back in the days, like they were in ancient Egypt, Atlantis, back in the times when civilization was just so beautifully balanced and rich and radiant between the masculine and the feminine. Now in the 21st century, in the modern world, sexually, we are so far apart, energetically and emotionally. When we come into lovemaking, it's almost as if we've forgotten those deep ancient practices and processes to really bring the female and the male into this rich embrace. So the seven gates is kind of like the process we would take as a modern day 21st century man or woman. This is the process how we can remember the old ways of making love with such intimacy, alchemy, magic. There's just so much more out there, or rather in there, Mary.
I definitely agree. I think that, I believe that part of the calling for a soulmate or the beloved or a deeper sense of relationship, I actually think is a calling to awaken these deeper aspects within the body. Yes. And I feel if you look at, perceived sexuality in the media and on television, it's so unfortunate because it really has disconnected us so deeply from the magnificence of our bodies. I feel that we've only really connected to this smaller aspect of what really lies within the physical body around sexuality.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I really appreciate it, the seven gates, the sexual healing in the back of your book. Mm-hmm. And then also just wanted to speak about the book Womb Wisdom, Awakening the Creative and Forgotten Powers of the Feminine. I was wondering if you, in the book, you actually define womb.
Whenever I began to tap into the womb, for the first time, dropping deeper into my body, for me, it was always energetically felt as like a deep well. You know, so back in Europe, we still have wells on the land. I don't know if it's the same in the States, but we have these circular, what looks like a hot tub on the surface of the earth. And then you just look down and down and down, and all you can see is black water. And you're sort of peering over the edge, and you start to sort of pick up on the desire to jump in. I get that every time I look at a well, this kind of like, oh my God, I just so want to fall into this place. And that is how I feel and receive the womb energy, that it is bottomless. And I also realize now, I used to do a lot of shamanic practice and study, and it was actually the womb space I was falling into. I used to imagine, you know, you take a little journey through a trunk of the tree and you take steps down and you'd find yourself in the underworld. And I'm recognizing now, oh my goodness, all of this journey work that I've ever done, I was instinctively going in via the womb space.
Yeah, I so understand that. It's almost like the void space in a
yes.
sense. And yes. I often see the womb as the void space that is within so many energetic places. There's the womb of the earth.
Yes.
There's the cosmic womb.
Yep.
There's the womb that is within all, everyone. And I just look at it as a creative center. And then also this place of birth for creating ideas, yet also, creating from this beautiful black water space, like you said.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And when we're on this, you know, beloved journey with the other, this womb space becomes your shared creative vortex or portal. So you can begin to work together with your partner to actually begin to, and it's the same thing, it's the same words. You can conceive an idea in this womb space, whether you are deep in conscious communication, you know, just sitting opposite one another, but connecting with this space, the woman, if she feels to, she can conceive the idea of the creative project that the two of you are sharing. So she can actually guide that seed into her physical womb space. And you can tune in and you can ask that seed, how long is this gestation period? And you may get something like 12 weeks, 6 months. And, you know, every time you make love together, you can actually fertilize the seed that is gently and slowly growing inside of you. So it works exactly the same way as if you were conceiving and forming a child.
Mm-hmm. Yes, birthing a child. And it's a way to physically manifest. I see the wombs as this powerful manifestation and magnetic tool. It's just beautiful.
Yes.
So, you know, our time is almost running short. So I was wondering, my dear Anaya, if you would talk to people about how they can get in touch with you.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm a massive Facebook person.
Mm-hmm.
You can find me on Facebook. My name is Anaya Sophia. You can also contact me via the website, which is pilgrimageoflove.com. And you can email me quite easily at anaya@pilgrimageoflove.com.
And you also have a few transmissions. If you go to the Pilgrimage of Love, you can connect to Anaya and also be part of a few energetic transmissions that she does every now and then. I believe you're doing one at 11:11.
That's right.
Yep. So please check that out. And Anaya, thank you so much for being a guest here. We are almost done with our show. I'm going to finish up with a little bit of info on what I'm doing next week. But I just wanted to say thank you for your wonderful, wonderful wisdom. And The Pilgrimage of Love is such an amazing book. It has such great energy. And thank you for sharing your story with us.
Oh, thank you, Mary. It was real fun to be on the radio waves with you.
Alrighty. Aloha.
Aloha.
So, I just wanted to express to the listeners, thank you so much for listening. Next week on my show here at the Mary Spicer Show, we're going to have the fabulous and amazing 1-2 Listen Advisor, Lacey Jackson, take part with me in our first segment of Mary and Lacey's Most Excellent Adventure. My name's Mary Spicer, and you're listening to the Mary Spicer Show here on 1-2 Radio, changing the way you listen to the world. Please come find me at 1-2-Listen. We're having a sale this weekend for the 1-2 Academy Advisors on Saturday morning. Please come and talk to me. Thank you so much, lovely Laura. Always appreciate it. Aloha.